And yeah, that's the first thing I wanted to ask you about is the Bilderberg Group, because we didn't have much information on them last year. And then this year I was like, what the hell's going on with that? Just like 3 weeks ago, I was like, what's going on with the Bilderberg Group? What's going on with all that? I was wondering if you could give us an update on that, because usually, what is it, like a week or two, they'll start meeting typically. Is that correct?
Well, look, okay, so something very important has happened is Bilderberg's now running the show. And they've been working since the 1950s, and actually since during World War II with the Council on Foreign Relations, in order to because the Council on Foreign Relations was the original the War and Peace Studies Group in 1943 was that put the whole idea of Bilderberg together. So that is 10-15 years before it even started. So that's how well these people plan ahead. And when it had the first meeting in 1954, their object was to put their people in charge. Okay, so over the years, they've succeeded in doing that. We're now many years down the line, whatever it is, 70, 80 years down, 70 years or so down the line. And they are in charge. I think it's pretty clear that the financial elite, your Goldman Sachs's, are running Europe. They're running America. And so we don't have any democracy. Of course, you won't hear that on the BBC. We don't have any at all, because, you know, you can chit chat about this and that or whatever you want. But these guys are just doing what they're going to do. And it's all hot air. So, I think that's basically what's going on. They're pushing us slowly towards this conflict with China. And what Chris Mulligan in Oregon calls hardening the sides, which is where you start to create conflict by making people choose, whether that's individuals, whether it's media outlets, whether it's countries. Everyone has got to choose which side they're on, China or America. Now, as far as I can see, Will, there's only one state with the strength, the literally physical and mental strength to rise above all that. And that's why they're so hated. And that's Russia. So the Russians are, I think, a kind of third force in the world. But now the Bilderbergers are in charge. Now, you know, as well as I do, that the China and the whole so-called communist thing in China at the end of the Second World War was largely orchestrated from the West. So things like Yale in China putting Chairman Mao in charge of all these bookshops in the 1920s, giving him a foundation to start the Communist Party over there. This is an American ruse, basically, and British. And so what we're seeing now, which is this amazing, atheistic communist planned economy, has now turned into the most powerful economy on the planet. And they are basically elbowing the Americans particularly, but all the Western countries, including Germany, out of the competitive international manufacturing markets. So, you know, obviously they're heading for some sort of a collision course, really, with the West. The West, the traditional, heart of industry, is no more, because the Chinese can do it much cheaper, better, So there, I think that's basically what we're looking at. Economic warfare between the West and China, leading to possibly a shooting war, certainly things like cyber war, psychological war, absolutely, because that is so easy to just take hold of a media organization and tell loads of lies through it. The Chinese have been doing it for, well, decades. And, we've really only in the last 3 or 4 decades started doing it big time in the West as well. So I think that's what's going on. Basically, if you look, by the way, you look at WikiSpooks. I don't know if you use that site much, Will.
Sometimes.
WikiSpooks is a terrific, everybody watching, listening to your program that's got anything to share. It's not much point in phoning up ABC and telling them, right, because you're going to get nowhere. You might even end up with an FBI knock on the door or something, yeah? But you can share it on Wikispooks, and you'll find that it gets a decent audience around the world. They have a page on Bilderberg 2021, and it's a terrific piece of work. It's a collaborative effort, you know, the way that Wikipedia should have been if it had been properly policed. But of course, you know, they just allow big corporations, politicians, etc., to effectively pay to run their pages. But also, they have a very strong political agenda themselves at Wikipedia. So they're on their page as a list of nearly 30 Bilderbergers who are now in key positions in the COVID pandemic. So we're talking about everything here from running public policy right the way through to vaccine research and things like gene editing technology research, obviously energy, which is a big part of all of this with the so-called Great Reset and the move to electric cars, and also, of course, the Great Reset, financial reset with Peter Thiel and his friends standing to make. I mean, what's happened, of course, is that the Bilderberg companies like Amazon, etc., obviously Twitter, but Facebook, Amazon, etc., they've done incredibly well out of all of this, and they're rubbing their hands. So that's what's happened, I think. We've now got basically a Bilderberg government in the West. Now, they don't really need to meet anymore because they're running the show, Will.
So are they planning on meeting this year? Because I couldn't find anything about that.
If they are, they're not going to tell us. Now, they would have already met. Okay, so this is the way it works. Every other year, you have a NATO summit. They're usually around the beginning of June. You've got obviously the G7 too going on. This year it's been a bit more interesting because we've also had the Biden-Putin meeting in Geneva. But this Bilderberg, they could have met. They usually meet a week before the G7, so that's the end of May, beginning of June. And usually they turn up on the Wednesday, they have a Thursday, Friday, Saturday conference, and then they leave on the Sunday. These meetings, if you can find out where they're taking place, which I think maybe in the future is not going to be possible, we'll see. I mean, it's not that difficult for them to hide where they are. They just don't tell anybody and they lie about what's going on at a hotel. We always had trouble over the years. Sometimes on some of the meetings, we only actually found out the day it started where it was taking place. So it's not exactly rocket science for the Bilderbergers to hide where they're meeting in a specific year. And it never was that difficult. It also involved a bit of sleuthing to figure out where they're going to be. Sometimes they would leak fake things themselves. But the point here is that it's not too difficult for them to meet in secret. Now, I mean, some people have suggested, like Dan Dix in Canada, for example, that the Bilderbergers may be meeting on Zoom or something. No. It doesn't matter how secure, so-called, your messaging service is. They will never, ever do that because they need to be able to cut deals face-to-face, and it's all word of mouth. And if anyone ever says anything about this, I will swear it never happened, you know. So that's the way it works. And you can't have any potential of anybody recording anything. Obviously, some of the delegates might be wired, you know, that's possible. But everything is checked, so it's very unlikely. So that's really what's been going on with the Bilderberg, I think, is that they're now running the show. They have obviously their bankers, their policymakers, but they don't need to tell us where they're meeting and if they're meeting. And certainly the steering group, I think, is... In fact, there were some changes, I think, last year to the steering group. A couple of new figures popped up on there and other people disappeared. So things are obviously still happening at the Bilderberg conferences. I think the other thing to note is that it's been a big since David Rockefeller died. It's been quite a big change in the character of it, the characteristics of it. And I think it's something that he encouraged. He realized, as an oil baron, as a banker, that the absolute key to controlling the rest of us was through the press. So what they hate more than anything else is when the press starts to shine a light on them. So they have put a great deal of effort into, number one, owning and taking over the existing news outlets. So we're talking about, you know, your ABC, CBSs in the States, to make sure their influence is very strong there through the CIA, you know, the Mockingbird media, and the same in Europe. So they paid a great deal of attention since the 1990s on taking over those. And then, of course, what they've done is they've set up these social media companies, Peter Thiel, etc., with your Facebooks, your Twitters, etc., etc., even your LinkedIns, and they are all Bilderberg firms. And so they've got everybody that's trying to talk sense, driven them into those hands of those Bilderberger tech firms. Now what they're starting to do, of course, is to ban people from those, or just delete them, or, you know, put screens up saying, you know, fact checker. And by the way, I'm sure you've seen that the fact checker, for example, on the vaccines was run by Moderna. It was owned by Moderna. This is the sort of thing where it's essentially it's a fascist media. This is a corporate media run by corporations, which is effectively just an advertising platform for them. And anybody is entitled to go on there and be critical, but they won't last long. I mean, we, for example, we've had here in Bristol in the UK, our Blairite mayor, who's a right-wing Labour mayor, left-wing supposedly but not, he's had a program on national TV talking about how he's been dealing with the Edward Colston statue, you know, this slave trader that people all around the world have seen, that, you know, the people of Bristol pulling it down and throwing him in the harbour. And of course, I think it wasn't, I right in saying it was a weekend after or a couple of weeks after there was an attack on the Albert Pike statue in the States in Charlottesville, I think. But anyway,
I did a few videos asking why they didn't want to take this statue down. We're taking all these statues down. I went to DC a couple weeks ago, and then even the last time I went, that one's actually gone. So I am actually happy about that.
Well, that's right. I think, you know, we had a campaign here in Bristol to get them to move it out of the city centre for years, and they wouldn't do it. Nobody would do it. And eventually it was done, you know, direct action, which is great. You know, there's no point in waiting. If you know something's right in your heart, you're absolutely sure about it, get organised with some friends and do it. Don't wait for the authorities, you know, whatever, the Templar, Masonic, Tory Party, Labour Party, whatever they are, people to do it. You know, we've just got to, you know, set up these little citizen groups to get action done. So that was on TV. There was a whole TV series about the mayor, how he reacted to it, how he responded to it. Very slick, very professionally done. It's just an advertising campaign for him. But what he's done is he's got all these headlines out saying, oh, it's got a fantastic reaction. Well, you know what? Most of the critics of the current administration here in Bristol are banned from the various social media. So of course he's going to get, you know, just like a week or so, 2 weeks ago, people like me just got all banned, you know, like you're not allowed to say anything anymore. So of course he's got a great reception. So this is the way they do things. They're trying to bend perceptions, and there's only a certain amount, I think, extent to which that will ever work, because people get wise to it pretty quickly. And what it's doing here, I don't know about the situation for you, Will, is that people are getting quite radicalized. We've got these we've got in the UK five main street movements now. We've got, obviously, there's been going on for quite a long time, which is the pro-Palestine movement. Every time the Israelis hit the Palestinians, there's a whole load of people here in Bristol. Thousands will come out in support of them. Sometimes it's led by the mosques, other times it's led by the sort of general Palestine solidarity student groups, you know, that sort of thing. So we've got those. We've also got the Black Lives Matter, which is a fairly positive thing, but it's tainted with a little bit of, it almost seems like an American lookalike campaign. So they chant things like, you know, hands up, don't shoot, or something like that, which doesn't make any sense on the streets of Bristol. I don't know why they're doing it. You know, we don't have armed police here, generally speaking, at all. So they're just copying, mimicking an American model. It's quite amusing, you know, in a way. It's not, obviously not a grassroots thing, this. So that's the Black Lives Matter, very instrumental in getting rid of the Colston statue. We've also got the anti-lockdowners and the vaccine skeptics, which is enormous as well. Massive demonstration next Saturday in central London, which they do. They're doing one a month now, and every time they get bigger and bigger and bigger because people are getting used to doing it. Nothing on the news about it at all, even though you're talking about something like 800,000 people in the streets of London. The BBC ITV, the main networks here, just brush it off and don't just ignore it. So, you know, that's obvious that they're scared to death of what's going on there. And then you've got something called Kill the Bill, which is fairly new. It's only the last, I think, sort of March, April, May, June. We've had that because they're introducing an incredible piece of legislation, Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, the Tories, which is aimed at criminalising squatters and travellers. Okay, so we've got tens of thousands, probably 100,000 in all, squatters and travellers in Britain. A lot of the travellers living in vehicles because the rents are so high, so they're not going to go sleep in a shop doorway. They go and buy a vehicle and they live in the vehicle, and they're trying to criminalise. Well, they are criminalising this, so that's another massive movement that's going on. So there's lots and lots happening here. I've forgotten what the fifth one is. That's four so far. But you see what I mean? There's a real ferment on the streets. And I think this is, of course, deliberate. They want the people out on the streets. They want to have a kind of maybe street battle, a bit of street fighting going on. And certainly a fight with the police. And particularly the last one, the Kill the Bill protest. It's quite clear there's going to be enormous confrontations with the police if and when that law goes through in Britain. So we're dealing really with, I think, a government which is, I mean, Boris Johnson, he's completely disconnected. He's in the situation at the moment, I think, where he's just running scared. He's lost control. He doesn't know how to get control back. I think he lost control probably when he went to into hospital with COVID, but it's got even worse since the Dominic Cummings, his assistant, has been on the TV, and he must be all sorts of threats, blackmail being used against Johnson. And I mean, I don't really feel sorry for the guy because he needs to speak out about it. But he thinks that everyone would think he was crazy, I suppose. So there'll be all sorts of blackmail being used against him. And in the background to all of this, we've got the Great Reset. And my God, Prince Charles. Here he is. He's going to be like some guy guru around the world. Oh, yeah, we're going to sort everything out for you guys and move us all into this amazing system where it's basically the Egyptian form of credit. So the Egyptian people back in ancient Egypt never had anything really of value. The authorities kept a credit score of every individual in ancient Egypt. And that's basically what they're moving us, what Charles and Klaus Schwab want to move us back to, is a bunch of slaves that at the behest of the government, they can just go, well, we're going to turn your credit off and we're going to give you a bit more, you know. So each of us can be almost like on a little slider that they can slide us up. You're a good boy. You know, it's exactly what they've been doing in China, isn't it, with the social credit program. The social credit plan in China is exactly that. So if the government approves of you, you get a high rating. If they don't, and I would like to think I'd have a zero rating on that system. Will?
Hey, hopefully we both have a zero rating on that system. And so one more question before we move on from the Bilderberg topic. We have the people that created the Bilderberg group were a couple Nazis, the Royal Family of England, the Royal Family of the Netherlands, and the Rothschilds. And people think, well, that's back in the day stuff. The Rothschilds they're not really important. The Royals are not really important. But we've seen time and time again that Evelyn and Lynn Forster de Rothschild are kind of like the glue of introducing people to Epstein and introducing Alan Dershowitz, who, in my estimation, is a wizard, for lack of a better word here in this channel. I don't want to get banned again. Do you think, and then we also have, it's come out now, Epstein was an FBI informant. He's close with Ehud Barak. What's the connection there and the reasoning of the sex, the underage girls? Because it's not just like we're talking about, oh, the Rothschilds and the royal family. And here we have the royal family like this with Saville and Epstein. And then we have them at the Bilderberg group. And then we have, Prince Andrew, Prince Charles. We have the Rothschilds interconnected with Epstein and everything. What's going on?
Hang on, because Andrew and Charles are very, very different, right? So the Queen is getting quite old. And so there is this kind of hovering, you know, a bit like Saudi Arabia, where when it's like the king might be disappearing, you know, the battle for succession is always a bit uncomfortable in a monarchy. And Andrew has been completely destroyed. His character references have all been destroyed. Actually, the interesting thing about him is he's not really done anything wrong. Andrew, it looks like, had sex with this woman who I think was 17 years old. So he hasn't actually broken the law. Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of immoral. And he may have done, he may not have done. But the point is, he's been smeared. The main reason for that is that he has no credibility to come in and make public statements about what happens with the Queen and Prince Charles or Prince William. The same exact thing has happened to Harry. He's been spun out to Vancouver by this crazy Meghan woman. She is just a total narcissist.
But what the hell is going on here? I can't make heads or tail of it. I watched the Oprah interview, and I see them saying, hey, the Queen, she's such a great lady, and we love her, and we love the royal family, but they're cutting us out of the money. They took all of our protection away. Is this a ruse? Like, what is that dynamic right there?
Well, I mean, the thing is, Meghan Markle, I think, has just been used to drag Harry across the Atlantic and out of the way, and also to discredit him. You know, because he's now, most people in the UK have got a little sympathy for him because what she's been saying in these interviews is nonsense. All this stuff about, they said that my little Archie can't be a prince. Well, no. And Princess Margaret's kids are not princes either, because it was never going to be a prince. Yeah. So if you are the grandson of a reigning monarch, or son or daughter, or grandson or granddaughter, then you can be a prince or a princess. But you can't. She's too far away from the whatever bloodline or wherever it is. You know. So she was Archie was never going to be a prince. This is just a joke, and it. And in any certain establishment circles in the UK, anybody with any power, clout and intelligence knows that Harry has just fallen for a complete imbecile woman that doesn't know what she's talking about on live TV. You know, so she goes in front of TV and says all this stuff. So there's been an attempt by Meghan to discredit the royal family, which has completely backfired over here. Everyone is just thinking, well, Meghan's a crazy woman. What's she doing? Harry's an idiot to be with her, you know. So there's all sorts of things like she said in that interview, we got married, just the pair of us. Well, the Church of England came out afterwards and said, no, you didn't. What are you talking about? So she's just a fantasist. And he, I'm afraid, has, you know, basically just become very, very loyal to her, largely because she is big on Diana, you know, so on his mum, and she had pictures of Diana all around her room or something. But anyway, so the point here is get rid of these people out of the way. You know, Andrew and Harry, get them out of the way, make them look stupid so that Charles can have his way on the succession and William. Yeah. So they've got all these people out of the way now. Neither of those, Harry or Andrew, are going to have anything worthwhile to say. And that's the point, because Charles is very powerful. He's extremely powerful. He's one of the key people behind the whole climate agenda. He's also set to be, in charge of this, effectively in charge of this great reset. By the way, also, when we had the Panama Papers a few years ago, it came out that Charles is making a lot of money out of this because his carbon trading system is his. Yeah, so that he's trying to get everyone to do carbon trading. Oh, yeah, and he's taking a little cut every time someone trades some carbon on the carbon tax. So basically, the guy's a crook. You know, I don't think he murdered Diana, but he was certainly aware of what was going to happen to her and what happened to her. There's no way he would have been unaware of that. So I would say, you know, he's the last person in the world, a wife mangler, I would call him, is the last person in the world that we should entrust with resetting the world economy. Just seems like the worst person in the world to do it. But that's what he's aiming at. So it'd be interesting to see if he goes for, to become king of Great Britain, And or does he want to be king of the world as well as king of Great Britain? We shall see.
Yeah, I certainly hope not. I'm hoping that the people that want to take down statues will want to take down the lords and the royals and stuff like that, because that would be the next step, obviously non-violently.
Well, yeah, but hang on, because the thing is about the... Okay, so you and I probably disagree on this, because I quite like the feudal system in a weird way, because every now and again it throws up somebody that gives a damn. And you can't get rid of them. Yes. So we had in this country, I think our own present queen isn't too bad. I mean, we've had in the past Charles II. Charles I and Charles II.
I'll give you that. You guys have had some serious tyrants, for sure.
We have, of course. But that's the beauty. The beauty of the system is that every now and again it throws up a wild card. Now, the thing is with the Republican system is anybody that looks like they're even going to be a wild card never gets close to being standing. That's the trouble. And the other thing is, if you know feudal landowners, big landowners in this country, I guess you kind of might have them in the States, but not to the same extent. They are incredibly wealthy, number one, but they're also very independent-minded, right? So you can't tell them what to think. You can't tell them what to do. And they kind of in the way. So this is what happened in our Civil War, is they swept away the feudal class as much as they could. Now, there's obviously still quite a few around. And the merchant classes moved in. The capitalists moved in, took over in the Civil War. And that's been the norm, you know, throughout Western Europe, throughout in the United States, Canada, everywhere else. It's the merchants that run the show. But the old fashioned feudal system has a way of throwing up these interesting characters from time to time. So whilst I'm certainly not a great believer in it, I think, you know, we have to be balanced and look at both. And it's not as if one is better. Obviously, in Saudi Arabia, for example, at the moment, it's a terrible, terrible dynasty they've got there. But maybe in somewhere like Bhutan, you know, it's not bad. It's some quite nice people running that country.
Yeah, the problem is, though, in any of these forms of government is even here in the United States, it's supposed to be better. We're supposed to have checks and balances. It never ends up playing out the way they say it will. I think the next venture from government for us, by us, I think the next one is self-governance. I think that's the evolution, but I do think that we're a while's away off there. But talking about, you know, what's going on in the UK, I was talking to a few of my buddies out there as far as what's going on with the Roni. And over here in a very, very liberal state, we're pretty much almost open for business entirely. In one of the more liberal states, there's very few places that will even make you put your mask on at all anymore. Is this something that the Bilderberg boys and girls had planned out as something that they wanted to roll out? Or is this something that they took it?
It should be. Come on, man. It's obvious, isn't it? Most people have had a vaccine now, so we're allowed to go and run around in the yard again. You know, we're allowed to be good boys and girls. We can do what we want because the vaccine people have had their vaccines. You're good boys and girls. Now off you go. You can go and have an ice cream, you know, and that's basically what's going on, isn't it? I think in this country, it's something like 80%. We've got pregnant women queuing up for a vaccine. It makes me sick, disgusting, horrible. They don't know what they're doing because of the mass censorship. Now, this is, you know, we even had, I don't know if you saw it, on one of the BBC Newsround programs last week, we had a woman who's the chief medical officer for Scotland, the Council on Foreign Relations, Scotland. And this is another thing. The Scottish and the Welsh parliaments have been set up to sort of try and harass Boris as much as possible and make him do more COVID measures and more. And so that woman, I can't remember the name of her, and I think she's an Indian woman, she went onto the kids' TV program saying 100% safe. Did you see that, Will? She said to the children of Britain watching their TV at 4 o'clock in the afternoon after coming home from school, see this woman saying the vaccines are 100% safe for children. In the United States, they've done the tests and they're 100% safe. Now, hang on a minute. You know, this is this is Dr. Mengele territory.
It's the most unscientific thing that I've ever heard. There's nothing that's 100%. There's literally nothing. There's nothing that's 100%. Science, the whole idea is you put something to a test and you try it over and over and over and over again. There's no such thing as something proven or scientific fact. that just doesn't happen. That's extremely dangerous, because even if you could prove something scientifically, that's not the case. That's not what the evidence
is. Lying to kids, lying to the children on the children's TV channel at 4:30 in the afternoon, trying to get them to have a vaccine in their arm. They don't need a damn vaccine, do they? They're kids, and they don't suffer with this stuff unless they've got some underlying health conditions. And even then, I wouldn't advise it personally. You know, what you've got basically is there's two main categories of people that definitely should not. It's up to you individual to decide, but the main reason to not have a vaccine, number one, is if you've had COVID before, you will be immune to it, so what's the point in putting yourself at risk with the vaccine? And secondly, it's the under 60s with no underlying health conditions are extremely unlikely to die with it. Apart from all of this, of course, as you know and I know, there are various treatments. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to mention them, but those treatments, ivermectin and chloroquine, which will save your life almost certainly. Something like 80% chance. Certainly, if you catch people early, it's even higher than that. So this whole idea that there is no treatment for COVID is one of the big lies. I guess it's a bit like the big lie of the towers collapsing on 9/11. You know, these the colossal lies that they've been telling us. And you're not allowed to challenge it. And if you do on YouTube, you start talking about ivermectin as a treatment. Ping! Oh dear, my channel's disappeared. And so this is the Bilderbergers herding us all around. They are obviously technotronic nutcases, but they're not nutcases. They're actually evil, very evil. And they're using television and they're using the threat of nuclear weapons, and they're using social media now as well to herd us. Now, just one thing I would say is, I don't know if you've seen the Altian Childs video, Will.
Yeah.
Which came out about, maybe it's about a month ago now, 3 weeks, yeah, a month must be around about a month ago. He's an Australian singer, and he was a Freemason, and he had a life-altering experience that made him decide, look, this Freemasonry stuff, I need to blow the whistle on it, and I'm getting out of Freemasonry. And he's done a five-hour video. Altian Childs is his name, and he's one of the X Factor winners in Australia, and he's done a massive expose of the links between Freemasonry and Satanism. It's effectively saying that, you know, that Freemasonry is an umbrella group within which these kind of satanic and other cults can thrive, and but detailing everything. And he spends something like an hour in all throughout this 5 hours showing you all these secret signs done by these celebrities that we know and love right throughout the world. So he's done a superb job there, really, I think, in exposing the cults. And that's what we're living in the West here. You know, it's a cult-controlled area where you will only succeed and make it to fame or fortune. You will only be promoted within the firm once you're a loyal cult member and you show subservience to whoever it is that's in charge. Now, you and I are not the sort of people that are going to do that. So, you know, like the zero on the social credit, you know, we're not going to progress through that system. And the lovely thing about Altian Childs is he's actually got his career from these people, and now he's thrown it back in their face, and he's now saying, this is who they are, this is how they operate, and this is what they've got planned in store for us. So he's done a terrific job on that. And, you know, we get people like David Icke talking about the Satanist, blah, blah, but he's detailing it, you know, everything in there. He's done a superb job.
Right now, because I got to check that out.
Yeah, well, have a good old look at that, but maybe share it with your viewers and your listeners or whatever. I run a series on the show I do once a week here on the radio in Bristol here, and that is conspiracy classics, right? So I've got on there James Files interview about JFK assassination, which is 2.5 hours of absolute solid gold, talking about the Chicago Mafia, David Attlee Phillips at the CIA, etc. And you know, he's done an amazing job on that. There's another one which is Bill Cooper talking about the Luciferian philosophy, which is an hour or so going into detail. But this, I've classed it as my latest conspiracy classic, even though it's only about a month old, because there's so much detail in there And you know, he's done it's 5 hours, obviously, which is a lot of time to watch. But we've been on to all sorts of other stuff, Will. I mean, the program I do here is a current affairs show. I was trained by Auntie, you know, the BBC in London, to do my job, and I just carried on doing it even after they elbowed me out. So I put together a 4-hour show every week where we cover a bit of everything. So obviously last week we're doing the G7, we're doing a bit about the Biden-Putin meeting, but I did about 45 minutes on the Chinese nuclear accident, because we've got a nuclear reactor being built just down the road here on the Bristol Channel in Somerset, and that's £23 billion going into that. Well, it's looking more and more like a white elephant all the time, you know, ploughing money into this thing. But it looks as if from this accident in China, it's an identical type of reactor. It's the first one of these new, I think it's called an EPR reactor, which has ever been switched on in China. And within 2 years of being brand new, the damn thing is already leaking radioactive gas. Yeah. So the French are trying to get them to switch it off. The Chinese are saying, no, it's nothing wrong. We just carry on. It's fine. But this is the reactor they're just building down the road from us here. So I did a whole thing about that. The other thing people don't realize is these big nuclear reactors, the Germans did the right thing switching them all off, obviously. What they do is they suck in fish, right? Because, you know, they've got a cooling system. They've got a big sucking pipe under the Bristol Channel down the road, the Severn Estuary. And they suck in tons and tons of fish of water every second, but they're sucking fish in with it, right? So they've got a damn great mesh filter that before it goes in, the fish hit this, boom, and then they die, obviously. And then they get it, this mesh thing moves up slowly, and then they cart the fish away, and they just go on a scrap heap somewhere. Anyway, all the fishermen in the area are saying, look, the number of fish is going down and down and down. There's hardly any fish left in the whole of the Bristol Channel. And they're making out, the Greens are making out, this is some sort of environmental thing. This having a nuclear power station is green, you know. Yeah, man, look, no, zero carbon. But all the fish are dead. And by the way, you've got radioactive waste. What the hell are you going to do with it at the end of the show? And by the way, it's also about 10 times more expensive power than anywhere else. So I think it's just, you know, I find it fascinating to look at these massive industries of the past that are just because the money they've got this powerful lobby that they're just self-sustaining the momentum of all this industry from the past. And the lobby and the government just saying, well, yeah, okay, build a nuclear power station. But it doesn't matter. It's not going to work. The thing is, though, Will, I think with this station, there's so much money gone into it already. The contractors, even if it doesn't work, are just going to walk away and say, well, thanks very much for the money. We're off. See you later.
Yep. Now, just a quick side note here, because we only have a few minutes left and I have at least one or two more questions I'm going to get to you. Do you think that, like, something like, potentially Tesla energy? What do you think is a viable alternative? Because nuclear sucks. Oil is not great. I mean, there's a lot of different ways we could do this. What do you think would be a better way of doing this?
Coal?
Yep.
We've got a lot of coal here. We've got a lot of coal underneath the Welsh hills. But I mean, you know, I'm being a bit flippant, really. I mean, the main answer to all of this, and there's been various films around about this, obviously The Planet of the Humans is one of the most well-known, but there are others too. Bright Green Lies is another film that's just out recently, which is looking at this fake green movement, is we reduce our dependence on energy. Simple. Yeah. It's really simple. What you do is you don't have long commutes every day, yeah? So you have places for people to work which are close to the home, yet don't have houses that suck in a load of energy. You don't need loads of cars. We in this country, we had a fantastic railway network up until the 1960s, until it was completely destroyed. And I don't know if I've ever told you the story of that. I had a long chat to a union man from the oil industry many years ago about this. And he said to me, well, look, they discovered oil in the North Sea. And the only way that the elite would let them pump it out was if they opened up, because they didn't want the British pumping out oil. It would depress the world market prices. So they said, you can pump your oil out the North Sea, you little Brits, but you're going to have to open up a domestic market in oil. So that's when they closed the railways down. and everyone started building cars. Yeah. And so that was in very basically throughout the 1960s and up until the mid 70s, car production was going crazy. Everybody bought a car. The train fares went up. The trains didn't even go where you wanted them to go because they closed all the lines down. So this is how they do it. Now, it's a very simple thing, Will. You just reverse that. Yeah. So you reopen the old railway lines. People can get on a cab or cycle to a station and go across the country and hop off the other end after having read half a book, rather than sitting in front of a, you know, traffic jam and driving. They can also have some lovely, innovating conversations with all sorts of interesting strangers on the way, on the train. So, you know, that's what we need to do. That will solve the energy crisis, I think, almost overnight, reopen the railways. But they don't want to do that, obviously. But that's my prescription, because, there's no need for us to be anywhere near as energy hungry as we are. The reason we are like this is because that they were pumping out loads and loads of cheap energy for decades. And we've just become used to it. What the real travesty of all of this, of course, is the electric cars and electric scooters and all that stuff. So what's happening? All you're doing is you're making the environmental destruction that you're doing disappear. So it's over there somewhere. But it's still happening. It's just that you can't see it in front of your eyes. It's a bit like that, you know, you go and buy a bit of meat from the supermarket, but you can't see the cow being slaughtered in the slaughterhouse. Yeah. But that's how people are just don't have the insight to see into these systems. And maybe they just don't really want to think about it. They just want to, you know, kind of get to work or whatever, or buy their piece of meat or, you know, the other thing, of course, is, you know, there's a massive amount of brainwashing going on with all this, electric car stuff and, oh, we've got to get rid of the diesel. We've got, by the way, the guy that it was in Britain back in around about 2010, maybe a bit before that, that encouraged the whole country to buy diesel cars rather than petrol cars. Now they've decided the opposite. Oh, the science was all wrong. We're turning it. It's a bit like 1984, isn't it? You turn it everything up upside down, but no one's supposed to notice. So no, diesel cars are now terrible. We mustn't have diesel cars anymore. We're going to tax them. So it's the same guy who's in charge of SAGE, and he's the chief scientist for Tony Blair. Should we say the junk science advisor for Blair is now running SAGE, which is the body responsible for all the science around scientific policy that's being implemented around the lockdowns and the vaccines, etc. So, you know, there's just a handful of these numpties in charge of things. But you know what? The media just ignores it. They look the other way. It's down to people like me and listeners, etc., who feed in to point these things out. And we share it with the public.
Yeah. And we only got a minute or two left here. And I thank you for your time. We'll have to do another one of these very soon. I did have a question from the UK. He wanted me to ask you about the PCR test and the ethylene oxide.
I don't know anything about ethylene oxide. Nothing. But the PCR test is a fraud. It's quite clear, the PCR test. It's basically finding, once you get down to very low levels of COVID in the population, which we have been for many months, most of the positive results on the PCR will be false positives. We're now, people are starting to use the lateral flow tests over here, which are much more accurate. Yeah. So, but I mean, there's various take home from all of this, Will. I'm not sure if you come across this. Stanley Laham, happy to put you in touch with him. He's a Florida immunologist, retired guy from Florida University. He was explaining on my show the other week. This is one thing that also got taken off of YouTube. Even though it didn't break any of their guidelines, but they just took it off because it's too explosive, was that what he said is he doesn't have the flu vaccine. And it's a good reason for that. He's trained in this area. And he said, well, look, 2018, it became absolutely clear that the flu vaccine is a failure. As the rates have been going up and up and up, and then 2018 was the highest ever number of people died of flu. But there are more and more people than ever had had the vaccine. So any idiot or, you know, a child can see the vaccine is not working. So he was suggesting and implying that perhaps that's one of the reasons why we've had this COVID vaccine push, because if anyone had actually noticed what happened in 2018 with the flu vaccine, then the pharmaceutical industry's income would be wiped out. No one would be bothering with the flu vaccine by now. So all sorts of fascinating things have come out of Stanley, particularly his prediction, which is now proved true, that as someone that worked on AIDS-like viruses and discovered a virus as part of his doctorate when he first qualified in the 1970s, he explained that this mRNA is likely to cause autoimmune disease. This is just from his own knowledge of the way the immune system works. It will migrate around your body, sit around in your organs, producing these little spike proteins, and maybe it might take a decade. It may be quicker than that, but your body will start to attack itself. And also, with the big sort of competition over here, I'm not sure about in the States, it's been between the AstraZeneca and the Pfizer vaccine. So which one are you going to take? And it looked like a lot of people, tail end of February, this year, 2021, were starting to go away from the Pfizer and starting to say, well, actually, I don't like it. It's too much of a sort of weird experimental mRNA thing. And so more people were going for the AstraZeneca. So then we got a whole load of news stories, loads of news stories. AstraZeneca dangerous. No, AstraZeneca, well, it's supposed to be safe, but we're not quite sure. So you know what? Lots and lots of people have just bought this propaganda and they've started to go, I think I have the Pfizer vaccine. But this is just, you know, lies, TV news lies, as you know.
Yeah. Tony, thank you very much for joining us. I know you're stupid busy and you've dedicated your life to doing the right thing, no matter the cost. So
can I just talk about the book I've got out, a paperback now, which is going into the origins of the Bilderberg conferences and looking right the way back to 1944 during the war. Now, this is it's called The Traitors of Arnhem. And it's actually a terrific book for Americans because it looks at the Americans during that battle in the Second World War. It's a brilliant film. It's called A Bridge Too Far. Many particularly blokes have seen it. And, you know, it's about the Battle of Arnhem in the Second World War. Now, there's a little bit of it. Robert Redford actually plays one of the guys in that film. But you can see there's a bit of an altercation between the British and the Americans. Well, what was going on there was crucial to the founding of the Bilderberg Conference, because the British stopped just as they were at the second to last bridge. The British stopped and the Americans went over. They took the bridge, but the British rolled their tanks over and they stopped, and they gave the Germans enough time to reinforce the area and to cut the British at the bridge in Arnhem off. And that is why I think, and I'm absolutely convinced of this now, that the Bilderberg meetings started in the same place, because the British had thrown that battle in order to buy time for the Germans to squirrel their wealth away, to do all these nice deals with the Allies at the end of the Second World War. I think it's just interesting to understand how something like the Bilderberg actually gets created, and why it's called the Bilderberg Conference is because it's at that Bilderberg Hotel.
This book is the unwritten history of the world. And why, if you want to know why we are where we are right now, you have to go back and do that. And last time I talked to Tony, he kind of teased a little bit of that. It's fascinating what is in this book. And I mean, if this is like a must read book for everybody, how do people get the book? How do people get in contact with you? And how do people donate to you? How do people find your show?
So the show is thisweek.org.uk. If you want to donate, that's very nice. But it's better really to buy the book, really. And also, it's an easy read. It's about 100 pages, but it takes you right through the story. And it even looks at what some of those units have been doing today that were involved in the battle in Second World War, you know, which is shows you where. I mean, for example, the 82nd Airborne Division, which did a fantastic performance in the battle, then went on to produce this guy as a sniper in the Korean War that went and blew John F. Kennedy's head off, you know? So it's just, I think, fascinating to see how some of these Second World War units had what they're actually up to today. Another guy from one of the other, I think it's the 101st Airborne, was involved in the coup in Ukraine, for example, you know? So, but the main point of the book is to look at the what is Bilderberg? Yeah, this is where it's all about. And the connections between these two important figures, one is Martin Bormann, Hitler's private secretary, and the other is Desmond Morton, who was Churchill's private secretary, and the deals they were doing at the end of the Second World War, and they wanted to start a Cold War straight away after. But, you know, this does show you, I think, just how the lengths these people are prepared to go to set up a war for their own, their own purposes, and to, you know, take all the loot. What happened to all that gold, the Nazi gold? So that's thisweek.org.uk for the show, and you'll also see links to the paperback book there, The Traitors of Arnhem, it's called. And there's also, even if people are into wargaming, what I've done, it's a bit nerdy, right? But I've sat down and if you want to actually play the game as a war game, if you've got one of the war games of the Arnhem Battle, I've actually put out two scenarios so you can actually play the damn thing out as it was, not as it's written in the history books, but as it really was, as I've discovered.
Well, guys, I'm going to check out this book. I have not got a copy myself here, so I'm going to check out this book. We're going to have to back
up. You message me your address. I'll send you a review copy.
I will. I will do that. That would be freaking awesome. That would be an honor. And yeah, and then after I read it, I'm going to come back on with a ton more questions. So, guys, go pick up Tony's book. Go visit his website. Tony, thank you as always. Keep up the great work, man. You're one of the few people that I can count on that's always going to be trudging through the stuff that I just can't never get to. And the fact that you're a detail-oriented, super smart, classically trained guy, it makes it all the better. So, Tony, God bless you. You enjoy your night, and we'll talk to you real soon, guys.
Okay, God bless you too, Will. Thanks very much for asking me. Speak to you soon.
Take care, brother.